Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, the 28th verse. Who wrote Proverbs? Solomon, that's right. The wisest of men. And of course, what makes this book of Proverbs so wonderful is it is an inspired book. Proverbs 22:28. Remove not the ancient landmark which thy fathers have set. What's the margin for landmark? The bound or boundary. If you were to walk up here to the northwest corner of our property near the top of Raccoon Mountain, you would find an iron stake driven in the ground. That represents the boundary between our property and the neighbors. Now suppose I go up there and move it over 50 yards. Does that really change anything? No. But it might fool some people. Is that right? And the wise man says here, and it's an inspired command, remove not the ancient landmark. To remove that landmark, to change it, would be to do what? I think I heard somebody say, to steal. Why, yes, that's right. And does the law of God have anything to say about that? Thou shalt not steal, as the eighth commandment. Now, the only way there can be anything stolen is for there to be property rights. If everything belongs to everybody, then I can't steal anything, can I? No. The only way I can steal from you is that there is something you have that does not belong to me. Is that right? And so when the eighth commandment says, thou shalt not steal, it gives us the divine command which is fundamental to all property rights. But this is more than dealing with land or money or houses. And so the tenth commandment spells it out. Will you repeat it with me? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Anything. We're not only not to steal it, we're not to even want to steal it. Is that right? That's what coveting would be there, wouldn't it? Not even to want to. Oh, I'm so thankful for the Ten Commandments. What do you say? And remember what the Master said in the Sermon on the Mount. He came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. And he said, as long as heaven and earth stood, that law would stand without even a letter changed. And so it is written, whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all, James 2:10. So speak he, and so do as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. Is it a law of liberty? Or would you rather have the law done away so you could steal anything you wanted to? I tell you, friends, if this law is written in our hearts, we wouldn't want to steal anything. All I want is what belongs to me. That's all. That's all. That's the attitude of the converted heart. And so before I take anything, I want to know first what? Well, it belongs to me. That is the eighth commandment. That is the tenth commandment. It's a wonderful thing, friends, to have this law so written in our minds and hearts that we not only know what it says, but love what it commands. Now, we're dealing in this class with this wonderful institution of the home. Where was the home made, or did it just evolve through millenniums of evolution? Was it made, or did it evolve? Made. Who made it? God. When did he make it? Creation week. Same week he made the Sabbath. And just as he gave us the Sabbath commandment, the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, so he gave us the seventh commandment to safeguard the holiness of the home. thou shalt not, what? Commit adultery. And as we studied the other day, adultery is to mix something with. To adulterate is to mix something with that doesn't belong there. How many people belong in the home? In this inner circle of the home? Just two. Just two. Let's go back to Genesis, and I want you to notice. You know what this word Genesis means, don't you? What does it mean? Beginning. In the beginning, Moses wrote, God created the heaven and the earth, Genesis 1:1. Now, the 26th verse, God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, have dominion. 27th verse, altogether, Genesis 1:27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Now, who was it that made man? God. Who was it that made man male and female? God. Did he know what he was doing? Did he do it all right? But listen, listen, doesn't that make a lot of problems in the world? Oh, yes, it makes lots of them. Eating makes a lot of problems, doesn't it? Are there people that are overweight? Are there people that are getting heart attacks and ulcers and a lot of other things just from the way they eat? Makes a lot of problems, doesn't it? Wouldn't it have been a lot easier if God had made us like a gasoline engine, an automobile? We'd just drive up to the filling station and say, fill her up and go on. Think of all the problems it would solve. When God made this world, friends, he built into the people and into the program wonderful principles, which if we remain in harmony with them, bring joy and health and life and success. But I want to tell you something. Everything that has great potential for good has great potential for evil. Let's take a few illustrations. Here's electric power. It's giving us light just now, illumination. Will that run a motor? Will it cook a meal? Will it freeze? You can go on and on. Today there are literally thousands of uses of electric power. Would you say it's a good thing or a bad thing? It depends on how you use it, doesn't it? Did you ever hear of anybody getting burnt with electricity? Did you ever hear of anybody getting killed with electricity? Happens every day, doesn't it? That's a different kind of electricity from the electricity that's lighting our lamps, isn't it? Isn't it? Same electricity? Which is it, good or bad? You see, it seems so easy to understand this as relates to electricity and so difficult for some people to see it as it relates to love. But love is the electric current of the soul. It has a great potential for good. It has a great potential for pain, for heartbreak. And may I tell you, friends, the reason that heartbreaks are so heartbreaking is that we are dealing with one of the greatest things in the universe. And there is no way to make it as wonderful as God has made it on the positive side without it having inherently a great potential for sorrow and pain. And thank God for his law, which guides us in how to apply love, how to use love, for it is written. Will you repeat it with me? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first and great commandment. All our love belongs to who? To God. He made us. He made us with love. And when God made man male and female, he did it not merely that children might be born. That's covered in the next verse, Genesis 1:28. God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it. God did it not merely that children might be born, but God did it that there might be opportunity for the expression of love in a special way. You see, to start with, as the second chapter of Genesis shows, man was just one, and the name of man was what? Huh? That's right. What was it? Adam. That's right. And how many were there? Just one. But you remember that before the day was over, after Adam sensed a need, a longing was awakened in his heart. God put him to sleep and from his rib made Eve, the first woman. And notice what it says here in the 22nd verse of the second chapter, Genesis 2:22. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one. One in Adam, two in Adam and Eve, now joined together again to make what? One. One. Years ago in South America, in the early days of our work there, Pastor Stahl was way up in the Andes, itinerating, and there a tribe begged that a teacher might be sent to them to teach them the way of God. And so Pastor Stahl promised that when he got back, he would study and try to send somebody. But the old chief said, well, how will I know whether the man that comes is the man that you sent with this special message or not? And guided, I'm sure, by the Spirit, Pastor Stahl took a stone with a hammer, broke it in two. He gave to the chief one part and he kept another. He said, the man that I send will bring you this half. You keep the half I have given you. And when he comes, this half and your half will fit, and you know that this is the man. My dear friends, in God's great plan for life, He has wonderfully arranged that one man shall fit with one woman and blend together in a union that brings joy to all the universe as they behold. I picked up another illustration of this that I like, this wording of it. I don't know the man that wrote it, but listen, see if you don't like it. God made us different from one another. He's speaking of man and woman. God made us different from one another, not merely physically, but mentally, aesthetically, and spiritually, that we might be to one another as music to words, making together the song that God wants to hear His children sing. Don't you like that? Don't you love to hear a song where the words and the music obviously are blended? Yes. And so, in making man and woman, God has arranged that. The blending of two lives. Two lives. Well, somebody says, yes, I think this is wonderful, and if a little is good, a whole lot is better. And the more the merrier. The more the blending, the more the mixing of men and women, the more happiness, the better in every way. But we are dealing, my dear friends, with something which, like electricity, has great potential. And our opening text says, remove not the what? The ancient landmark or bounds. Now we might reason, we might philosophize about this thing, but we don't have to. The law of God makes it very clear. This we've been studying, we're going to study it some more today. God has set bounds. And as in the ancient sanctuary, He said all the people of Israel can come in the court, but only the priests can go in the holy place, and only the high priest can go in the most holy place. So, my dear friends, in the sanctuary of the home, outsiders are not to enter. Outsiders are not to enter. While there is a love that is proper for the world, and there is a close fellowship which is proper between brothers and sisters in the church, there is a love that belongs within the boundaries of the family, and a special intimate love that belongs in that most holy place, the union of the husband and the wife. And this I want to study with you further today. Up here in Fort Knox, for many years, much of the gold reserve of the United States government has been treasured and guarded. If you were to go up there, you'd find some soldiers on guard night and day. That gold is the property of the government. In every woman's heart, there is a love which is more sacred than all the gold in Fort Knox. And that gold is to be guarded by her lawful protectors, her father and mother as she's growing up, by herself as she comes to assume responsibility of adult life, by her husband when she's married. That love is to be sacredly guarded, and in its intimate expression, it is to be shared with one and one only. And the converse is true of the man. And let me say to you, my dear friends, reserve is necessary if we are to preserve. Modesty guards virtue. Will you turn, please, to Adventist Home, page 404. And I want you to notice an interesting statement here. The middle of the page. Do not see how close you can walk upon the brink of a precipice and be safe. Avoid the first approach to danger. The soul's interest cannot be trifled with. Your capital is your character. Cherish it as you would a golden treasure, the gold of Fort Knox, but something far more valuable. Moral purity, self-respect, a strong power of resistance must be firmly and constantly cherished. There should not be one departure from reserve. Not one departure from reserve. And my dear friend, some of us sitting here this afternoon may have already had in our past experience some breaking through the barrier, some breaking down of reserve. I tell you, there's good news. Jesus can help us. He will restore the years that the locust hath eaten, the canker worm. God is in the business of rebuilding the barriers that protect the sanctity, the purity of the marriage relationship. There should not be one departure from reserve. One act of familiarity, one indiscretion may jeopardize the soul in opening the door to temptation, and the power of resistance becomes weakened. Let me state it very simply, dear friends, and then study it with you for a few minutes. My heart is for one, only one. My hands are for one, only one. My eyes are for one, only one. This is God's glorious ideal for every husband, every wife. This is what is involved in the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Oh, somebody says, but certainly we have thoughts of love for others beside husband and wife, indeed, but different. And says another, certainly we have looks of love for others beside husband and wife, indeed, but the look is different. And someone says, surely we have a caress for other loved ones and dear ones and near ones beside husband and wife. Indeed, but the caress is different. There is a love that belongs to the most holy place in that union of one man and one woman that is not to be shared with others. And if we will study the inspired instructions which God has been pleased to give, we can understand what those bounds are. They're just as clear as the golden walls of the sanctuary and the beautiful veils with the embroidered cherubim. The lines are there, simple and clear. You remember Solomon wrote that beautiful inspired love song, the Song of Solomon. In the 6th chapter in the 9th verse, as Smith and Goodspeed translate this, the song goes, "The only one is she, my dove, my perfect one." The only one. This is what is involved. Well, you know, friends, when a young man, a young woman stand at the marriage altar, when the vows are said, the minister asks the question, "Will you leave everybody else and take this one? Forsaking all other, will you keep yourself only unto her as long as you both shall live?" And strange to say, the answer always is, "I do. I will." Well, you say, "Of course, what's strange about it?" The strange thing is, dear friend, the thousands today who take those vows have never kept them. They've never kept them. They've never kept themselves to anybody or for anybody. They have selfishly squandered their love. They have selfishly used their hands, their eyes, their hearts to express intimate love first with this one and that one and the other one. And they've kept that up since they were 12, 13, 14, in some cases before, and all through the teens. And now they come to the marriage altar, and all of a sudden they promise that they're going to do what? Forsake everybody else and be truly just one. I thought sometimes if they were honest, they'd say, "Wait a minute, preacher, I don't know whether I can do that or not." But of course they don't do that. That wouldn't be expected. Think about it, my dear friend. Let me tell you something. The 7th commandment is just as much for the unmarried as for the married. God intends that the young man who comes to the marriage altar and promises to take this one girl and love her alone will have demonstrated through his teens and 20s or whatever the length of time from adolescence on into the day of marriage, God intends that he will have demonstrated that he has control of his affections, that he doesn't let his eyes wander and let his hands and thoughts linger where they should not. Now, God intends that there shall be full self-control. Well, somebody says, "When should you give your hand? When should you give your eyes? When should you give your heart?" Not until it is settled as to who that only one is. Settled? Shall I say settled forever? Ah, but somebody says, "Would you take all the fun out of it?" Yes. I'd take all the fun out of it, but not all the joy. There's a world of difference. God never intended that courtship or the experiences leading to courtship should be fun in the sense of just a frolic, a gay time. God intended that seriously, earnestly, humbly, trustfully, a man and a woman should seek God. We're going to be studying in this class God's way of Christian courtship. God's way of arriving at the settled truth concerning your life companion.